Hey everyone, this is Steph from Let's Try This, your new favorite podcast. My co-host Kevin and I don't always have a lot in common, but we do happen to be married to each other, and we're not afraid to get a little passive-aggressive.
That's just what I think.
Are you serious?
Well, okay, Mrs. Perfect.
Every week we discuss stuff like professional wrestling, reality TV, pop culture, and life as newlyweds, but that's just the beginning. You can always expect us to try new things, hence the name. So buckle up and join us every Thursday for some fun and maybe even some fights on the Fakakta Comedy Funhouse Network at fcfnetwork.com and everywhere you find podcasts. Let's try this because you just might like it.
Fakakta Comedy Funhouse Network.
Everybody, it's The Voice, and I am on location. I am still in Nashville. We're sitting down with Mr. Neil from Yeah Zoo.
Yeah.
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 Yeah Zoo. And this was one of the breweries I wanted to sit down with when I was in town. They were the first Nashville craft beer I ever had. The first time I was down here about 4 years ago. And my friend Denny, friend of the show, former guest, had great things to say. He's like, yeah, we need to check out some of their beer. We didn't come to the brewery, just went to a bottle shop and, you know, definitely got some of the Hefe, took that home, and enjoyed it. And I was like, the next time I'm in Nashville, gonna have to make a stop, actually see HQ, maybe we can do a show, and here we are. So I want to thank you for having us here today.
Thanks for coming by, man. I appreciate y'all being here.
And Freckles is joining me as usual for these road shows. And Drunken Lullabies is brought to you by Distill Brewery. And Distill was founded in Bloomington, Illinois, and has been boycotting bland since 2013. Their hard work and craftsmanship has led to a wide array of beers that are anything but bland. From the Wild Sour line to the barrel-aged St. Dakara series, Distill's award-winning beers include something for everyone. With options like Weisenheimer, Vertex IPA, Syncopathic, and Dos Vidania, still doesn't disappoint. So we here at Drunken Lullabies encourage you to boycott bland alongside us. Support flavor, drink Distill. All right, we're going to drink some Yazoo.
Good deal, man.
Drink right now. And for you listeners at home, the Drunkomaniacs, the drinking game is in effect. So anytime one of the three of us swears, that's a drink. Anytime there's a pop culture reference or an impression, that's a drink. The Szymanski rule is in play, so anytime there's an audible expulsion of gas, that is a drink. And anytime the word of the day is said, that's a drink. We're going to make the word of the day Yazoo. So anytime those happen, you take a drink. That way you get tipsy right along with us. But now it's time for us to get a little bit of get our drink on. What should we start with, you think?
Man, I poured you probably one of the most random samplers I would imagine anybody has ever poured you, to be completely honest.
Okay.
So I'll run through them and then we can taste through them of what I poured you. Starting at the very top here, okay, on your top left, that's our Saison de Bois. If y'all want to go ahead and get into that one, I can run down in a little bit.
I'm sure you'll be okay with that.
Yeah.
So that's, her go-tos.
Man, I'm a firm believer the number two styles that the top two styles that most American breweries screw up the most, mm-hmm, are Saisons and Kolsches.
Okay.
For the simple reason that they're, on paper, are very simple beers, mm-hmm, and the more simplistic they are, the better they are.
Right.
You know, of having that real good, nice, sharp snap to the end of
a
Saison.
I'm a big fan of
Kolsches. Yeah, dude, I love Kolsches.
They just don't get made a whole lot.
I know, because we can't leave them alone. Yeah. I was in Cologne about 3 or 4 years ago, and that's the only thing I wanted to try because, mm-hmm, it's such a simplistic, earthy, grassy beer. That Brandon Jones, a guy that runs the Saison de Bois, is a part of our Embrace the Funk series of, mm-hmm, beers. It's our whole side project. I say side. I'm not even going to dignify by saying side project. That means it doesn't have as much focus as our main project. It's not even a side project. It is another part of our company that Brandon Jones, our that's been with the company for a couple years full time now, but we've been working with him for a few years. But he has a Willy Wonka-esque wonderland of free reign to do anything he wants with sours, wild ales, wild yeast, and bacteria. And the Saison de Bois, this is the second year he's made this one. And very rarely do we ever actually send our beers to any of the rating listicles or anything.
Listicles, but, that's a fun word.
And we sent this one to Paste Magazine. I did that because, I mean, we sent it because I was thinking there. I didn't think there would be 120 Saisons that people would send. But going back to my previous comments, this one ended up finishing fourth out of 120 that they blind tasted. And I know how those tastings and stuff go, man. It can get a little weighted. And I'm not just saying this one's legit because we rated high in it. Mm-hmm. But I know that there's very few Saisons out there that are made pretty solid, you know. And you look at, you know, what Oma Gang's been doing for years and a few folks like that. Not a lot of people have the patience to make them correctly. And we used to make one of our seasonals called Rye Saison. Mm-hmm. And for 5 years, we fermented it at five different temperatures, starting at like 70. And then ended up, the last few batches, we fermented it at like 95 to 98. And anybody that's ever brewed before, that just sounds crazy as hell. But the yeast that that Saisons are made out of are just lunatic. So I think this one finishes up really nice.
Yeah.
I mean, we just released that one.
Right flavor.
Yeah, Brandon's doing such a great job over there because he's not under any pressure. We don't. There's more beers that I don't know about that he's producing than ones I do, that we do, because he's not under any pressure or any timeline to release anything. So if he feels it's right and it's good and it's the best we could put out, then he lets us know, and then sales team and, you know, tap room and everybody knows about it. But I'm sure there's plenty of cases where he's had to dump stuff down the drain that we never knew existed. But it's good for us because we're not financially obligated to go like, oh god, we gotta sell this, we can't lose money. It's right. Like, well, if it's not what you like and you're not proud of, then who gives a shit, you know? So he's doing a really good job of that.
But how long has he been brewing?
He's been brewing quite some time, you know. He's we've been friends with him for years, and you know, every home brewer has that certain particular style after a while they attach to. Mm-hmm. And it's like their style, whether it be porter or stout pails or IPAs. Brandon had a batch of Purple Haze, I believe what it was, or I think it was an Abita that had gone sour on him or something. Mm-hmm. Got infected, and he really liked it, and he just started going down this path of sours and wild ales.
Okay.
And then realized there wasn't a lot of resources for home brewers. Mm-hmm. And those styles of beer. So he started writing a blog. His wife encouraged him to start a blog called Embrace the Funk. He started Embrace the Funk and just started documenting everything, and we became really good friends with him. And Linus and Lila, our owners, took a trip to Belgium about 3-4 years ago, and their only rule was they only went to breweries they could bike to, and they only took stuff they could haul on bicycles. And majority of those breweries were sours and wild ales, and they really loved them. And, you know, came back, and it's kind of serendipitous, you know, around that time a year or so before, we'd had a batch of our Sioux, which is in your sampler here, our Imperial Smoke Porter. Okay. That had gotten infected, and we pulled it all back to the brewery before, you know, it started turning out.
Right.
In the market.
Yeah.
And it turned to a sour phase that wasn't what we wanted out of the Sioux, but we're like, oh, this shit's good. Because, you know, good accidents happen all the time in wine and liquor. Mm-hmm. But they don't ever happen in beer.
We had a happy accident on the show not too long ago from Distill, actually. Some of our brewer friends sat down with us, and they're like, all right, here's our new, we just call it the Pilot IPA 1. It was a double dry hopped, but it got way, like, double the amount of hops. Mm-hmm. My friend Tim screwed up or something, and it was a very expensive mistake, but the beer turned out great.
Yeah.
And they've since made a second batch.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, sometimes you accidentally hit a home run, and other times, yeah. Dream porters.
But I would say it's probably less than 5% of ones in the beer business that are home run, because there's just so many variables to screw things up, you know. We had one that we made, and if you ever get a chance to get a hold of it, or any of your listeners get a chance to get a hold of it, it's like the holy grail, in my opinion, of the beers we made. It's called Never Again.
Okay.
And we had got, you see these huge barrels. We got a big tall one next to the foam booth down the patio that's about 4 feet, about 3.5 feet tall, 130-gallon puncheons. And we'd gotten some of those from a cognac, Oloroso cognac. We got about 12, 13 in. And before Brandon put liquid in them, they called and said, hey, don't put anything in those. They have mold. You got to get rid of them. So we just gave them all away, and they're a bitch to move around or anything. And so they sent us another 11 or 12, no charge. So we put liquid nose, and he only could get like five of them to stop leaking. The rest of them, either it went down the drain or it was just a disaster. So after that, I mean, we had to use like hot glue and wax and everything we could to get these barrels to stop leaking. Finally, we got like three or four of them to stop leaking enough to age for about a year or so. And we pulled the liquid out of it. It was ridiculous. It's so damn good. Yeah. You get just that good velvety flavor and just enough of the vanilla and that little slight sharp you get out of cognac out of them. And palate fell over on the way over to the warehouse. Busted about 19, 20 cases out of that. It was just one disaster or another, and that's why we called it Never Again.
Yeah.
But the beer turned out, which is irritating as hell, because the beer turned out so good. Yeah. We couldn't remake it if we wanted to, but it turned out so damn good, you know?
Well, I'm enjoying this one, and we did a peach-themed episode at a friend Rothgar's house, and we had Lovin' on Peaches.
Dude.
Both. We had one and two.
Nice.
And we did a side-by-side.
How did number one hold up?
It held up. I'm trying to remember. I think I liked two better. I know the time it did it well. Got a little funkier.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. I mean, they were both good. And it's like when you're drinking them side by side, it's sometimes tough to pick out because they'll linger and, like, other flavors will develop or whatever the more you drink it. But, yeah, it was great. He had those in his cellar and pulled them out. We're like, oh, cool. We're going to do a little mini verticals.
Yeah. What else did you have in that peach thing? Were you there?
The peach one? No. Those were the only beers from you guys. We had one from Scratch that was from their Stone Fruit line or something. And that one was pretty good. I don't know if you've heard of them. They're out of Ava, Illinois.
But man, as many breweries are opening now, do you not feel like the old guy now? Like, I've never heard of them before. Yeah, you know, when you first get it, I'm not sure how old you are, but when you first started getting juiced and in breweries, you're like, oh yeah, dude, I visited those guys. I've been to every brewery and blah, blah, blah. I visited, you went back, and you're like, oh shit, y'all have added 15 more breweries?
That's exactly what my friend Denny said. You know, it's been almost 4 years since I was here.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I'm wanting to come down and check out some breweries. I have a few in mind. And he's like, dude, like, the beer scene has changed so much since you were down here last. And I mentioned Southern Grist and Bearded Iris was wanting to check those out. He's like, dude, I don't even know those ones.
Yeah.
You know, but he's not as, he doesn't have a beer podcast.
Yeah.
But, you know,
yeah,
he'll drink craft beer and when he plays in his band and whatnot out, he's at least familiar with the big boys. So
it's a good time, man.
Keep up on it. And anytime we're on a road trip, we're usually hitting at least one or two breweries a day. We get a sticker, we slap it on the fridge at home so we can remember where we've been.
Yeah, the Mississippi, to tie into that, Mississippi is the last state to go legal for their breweries to be able to sell pints and beer out the door. And this happened less than 60 days ago, July 1st. So
that's good news for our friend Tyler living down there in Mississippi.
Where does he live at?
That's a good question. I'm trying to remember. I know it off. If I think about it.
It's all good.
But he's in Mississippi, and he sends us beer mail frequently. Mm-hmm. He's the one that hooked me up with that preservation.
Oh, nice, dude.
So,
It's interesting you talk about the travel and stuff. Before it used to just be restaurants. You're like, oh, what do we see on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives?
Right.
What was on the Travel Channel? But now it's the same way at breweries, the way people you know, that's what I'm so excited about our friends down in Mississippi is they can now start to reap the rewards of the beer tourism. Because, don't get me wrong, there's a good bit of stuff in Mississippi to see, and it's an absolutely beautiful state with great people and the food and stuff, but it's about time that the beer, you know, travel and tourism got caught up with it too. Because, I mean, like I say this all the time to people when breweries come into Nashville and send their beer here. Mm-hmm. In the South, we're just used to people like bringing their stuff to us.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if I go, like, you ever been to Jamestown, New York? Like, no. You ever been to Jamestown, New York? Exactly. But you've heard of Southern Tier, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a difference in that is like there's cities that we would never hear of.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, would anybody ever go to where's Three Floyds from? Muncie?
Munster,
yeah. Well, exactly. Would anybody ever go there?
No.
And it's like, but you look at the people in the pilgrimage from Dark Lord Day, that they have to start seeing that in the local economy and stuff like that.
What I'm looking forward to, and I've only seen it a couple times, I want it to wear the craft breweries are on the interstate signs.
Like, you're right.
This exit comes to Yazoo, you know, or three points needs to be on it.
And Tennessee, yeah. 80. In Tennessee, we have wineries, but I think that
it's
because it's romantic.
Yeah.
You know?
You always see, oh, winery, this exit. And it's like, what about the road sign for distill? You know?
Yeah.
And our
no offense to wineries, but most of them buy their juice from somewhere else, not from there. But
true.
At least with the breweries, 98% of what we're using is local.
Yeah.
And that'd be the water, you know? And everybody can kind of relate to that, you know?
So it'll be cool if it ever gets to that point. And I don't see why it shouldn't. Because, I mean, a lot of them have food. So, I mean, you put it up there with places to stop. And, you know, maybe not Three Floyds is family-friendly per se, but you know, a lot of them, you know, if you've got a young kid, you can still come, you can have a flight, they can eat a grilled cheese or something, and you know, it's not too seedy in most of them.
Yeah,
I mean, you may be in an industrial warehouse area for some of the craft breweries, but it's nice, you know, when you're like right in the middle of a nice downtown area. And
I didn't notice it. My children are small. My oldest is 2.5, but I didn't realize it until I started working at Yazoo 9.5 years ago that our owners mentioned it. The rarity of places then it was for parents could go and have a pint and kids have kid food and, you know, be able to run around and not have to stress about it. And I live in a small community outside Nashville, and, dude, there's nothing there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing, a place where you could, like, bring your kids and not have to worry about it, and mom and dad could just hang out and have a decent beer selection.
And I know some people don't really like that. They're like, if I'm going out and I'm having a beer, I don't want to hear kids.
Oh,
and it's like,
I get
but
that.
I bet they're not parents.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, sometimes you may need a drink after, you know, a long day being out with the kids and that. And
I think with being a parent, you get to a point where you're like, dude, we're not price shopping.
Yeah.
If it's a place where you can go and you can get all of those things, you're not going to go there for 25-cent wings and two for one pints. If you go in, like, normal pint price is, you know, $5, and theirs are $5.75 or $6, you're like, dude, I'm only going to have a couple. It's not that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas the people that are going in for the budget shopping or whatever, you know, I don't know. Maybe their mindset's a little bit different, but I was that guy for a while, so.
Like, we showed up yesterday at Southern Grist, and we walk in, and they have, like, a shelf with a bunch of board games and stuff. And I believe Triptych in Savoy Champagne is the same way. When you walk in and you see that, guy, I'm like, okay, this is a family-friendly zone and a quote-unquote safe place. And, yeah, there were several kids in there. And
I think, and I'd say this coming from a parent, I think it's the same way with college kids get the same bad rap as parents with or people with kids in those situations.
Yeah.
Because the only point of reference you have are the loud, drunken assholes.
Right.
It's the same way with kids. The only ones you have a point of reference are the ones that leave Cheerios and shit all over the place and are running around, you know, stealing other people's purses and pushing other kids down. Whereas, like, most people, I think their kids are pretty well behaved for the most part. It's just the ones that's just like, oh, yeah, dude, he's the one that knocked the pint glasses off the table. You're like, yeah, that's your kid,
you
man.
You can't come back here anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I always have this philosophy. That people, it's the people that their dogs and kids are, the kids are being kids and the dogs are being dogs.
Right.
But everybody's like, your kids and dogs are assholes. I'm like, no, they're not. They're being the realest people in this situation.
Yeah.
It's the people that know that they're assholes and should know better to not bring them around other dogs or, you know, those situations. So, but yeah.
I think it's a relief to be able to go to a place like that because, I mean, before, and when I thought about going to a restaurant and, like, ordering a beer when I was with my son,
You always kind of felt self-conscious about it.
Try being in the South.
I'm having one. What's the big deal?
Yeah,
it's not like I'm sitting here
doing shots.
Like,
yeah.
We're not doing body shots with my 3-year-old.
Yeah. That's what I tell people.
Well,
you know, it's like Listerine is 14% alcohol, dude, and you don't need ID to go buy that.
Yeah.
So if this is really what we're getting into, and you're that concerned about it, I'm a little bit more concerned about the 14% bottles of booze in everybody's liquor cabinet than I am the 2 or 3 pints that are 5% that you can go out and get. So
now you mentioned Mississippi. We drank a beer yesterday that at the time was the strongest beer you could make because their ABV laws. You think that's next, that maybe now that they're progressing with being able to sell a little differently now, that maybe they can start getting higher gravity?
I think
stuff?
They will a little bit more for their tap rooms that they can now have, but I doubt you'll see that much more in distribution. We're only distributed statewide in Tennessee and Mississippi. We send some beer to Charleston, South Carolina, just because it's an awesome food town, and then Evansville, Indiana, where the other Gerst house is at. But Mississippi, last time I checked, is 72% of the beer sold in that state is Anheuser-Busch products. So when you look at a little bit lower demographic of folks, which is a bit of Mississippi is, but the craft beer scene and everything is coming along. But for me, I always say Mississippi is a good good dose of reality of what, you know, you hear all the talking heads in the craft beer world pontificating on another 45 IPA bars out in San Diego or Chicago or Indy or so on and so forth. And then I go and spend like four or five days in Mississippi and I'm like, it's not a bad thing. It's just a few years behind the rest of the country, which, hell, let's be honest, Tennessee we are also. But I'm optimistic, man. There's good folks down there. And, you know, I think there's a lot of folks like in any beer community was 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. People are just like, we're not doing this for any other reason. It just needs to get done, you know. So that's a good part about it.
Tyler's from Collinsville. I just looked it up.
Wow, that's a weird town to be from. It's kind of odd. Not a weird. The town isn't weird. It's just an odd spot.
Yeah.
Because Mississippi is kind of like Arkansas. The majority of the state is rural, too.
And all his friends, AB InBev.
I got to search and see where Collinsville is at. I wonder if it's in the Delta.
But, yeah, okay, we have a Collinsville in Illinois that's right outside of St. Louis. That's why I was like, I know it's a town that I'm familiar with, but not really.
What do y'all think about the Du Rouges, the next beer you have?
Is that what?
Yes.
Yeah.
That is our cherry. That's our cherry Du Rouges. It's the first beer that we actually, from the Embrace the Funk line of beers, that we won a Great American Beer Festival award for.
Nice.
I believe it was about 3 years ago. This is one of the main flagships of the Embrace the Funk line. We probably make, well, the batches of this keep getting larger and larger. This is a Flanders Red that has aged about 18 months in red wine barrels.
I was going to say, it definitely has the wine character to it.
We try to target this time of year, but man, if it's able to be released a month before or a month later, it is what it is. And you know, that's another one that I'm very proud of. And this one, drinking it, I honestly hold it up there right next to a Rodenbach or a Grand Cru. And a lot of the other Flanders that are out there. And I say that just because I know Brandon has gone elbows deep and still does on the due process of all these to get the proper flavors and stuff out of it. We did this one, and we have a cherry version of it, too, that turned out really, really well also. But those are two styles. We actually have another one. I can send you home with a few bottles for a future podcast if you want.
I would be more than happy to, to take those off your hands.
I beat this to death all the time for y'all and your listeners, because I know hopefully it won't be another 4 years before you get back. But
I don't think so.
As you can see in Nashville, it's booming. Mm-hmm. It's thriving so well.
It was food, booming 4 years ago. That's why the traffic's up.
Food and beverage and everything is just doing so well. And this last 5 months in Nashville has been like there's circus and then there's circus times 10.
Yeah.
In the last 4 months, we've had the Predators have gone through four layers of the NHL playoffs, finishing with them being the Stanley Cup playoffs, losing in game six. But that rolled right into our CMA Fest, which is usually about 150,000, 200,000 people in town. Then that rolled right
into... I've got some friends that are coming down.
Oh, really?
They aren't coming down for that. It was just... It happened to be that weekend, and they're like, it is a nightmare trying to find a hotel for that weekend.
Yeah. We're one of the number one cities for Airbnb as a company. That's how underserved we are, hotels.
We were looking at those. Those were still kind of pricey, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what you get with a boom town.
It is, man. We got about 10 to 12 hotels in process of being built right now, hopefully to get caught up. Our room rates are now on average more than what you find in New York or L.A. or D.C. It's pretty crazy. But, we rolled into the, you know, CMA Fest, rolled into 4th of July, rolled into the summer busy season, and then this eclipse this last week. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not sure.
So you guys were in the path of totality and everything?
Yeah, we're dead. We're the biggest cities right in the dead center of it, you know.
Southern Illinois was, where we're from in Peoria, it was, what, like 90-some percent? Mm-hmm. It was pretty close.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to get a lot darker outside than it did. I was working. I'm a bank teller. So I'm staring out a window, and it's just like, man, it was actually darker when it was storming earlier.
Yeah, it was ridiculous, man.
We were gonna miss it totally.
Yeah,
it ended up the clouds and rain passed over about an hour before the eclipse hit. Otherwise, so many people were gonna be pissed off.
Yeah, there was a few.
I just spent $12 on these glasses, and I can't even use them.
There was some strategically placed clouds here in Nashville that skewed someone's vision.
Yeah,
I stayed at my house, and we were even a little bit further inside of it. But man, being able to take off those glasses and see the sun being covered up 100% was pretty kind of a trip.
Yeah, I saw some really cool pictures. Some friends of mine actually went down to Southern Illinois. That they went to Scraps, the brewery I mentioned, and they had like a little party down there.
Yeah. Are y'all getting some of the next one, 2024? It's going up through Indiana.
Yeah,
I think it's going right through Indy and all that too.
Yeah, 7 years from now.
Yeah.
So.
It'll be here before you know it. That's what all the kids say.
Yeah. And we'll be, man, I don't even know how many episodes we'll be at that point. That's too
time
much flies. Math right now.
Does it feel like, this will be 91, 92, right?
Yeah. Actually mid-90s because I recorded
a few others
already.
Yeah.
And I'm usually ahead of the game.
Yeah.
So like next week's show is already done. And then I just recorded, this is the third show I did down here. So those are all going to be edited this week. So I'm in October.
Yeah. So how long have y'all been doing the show?
About 2 years. Been podcasting for three, but Drunken Lullabies started. We released the first episode in November of 2015. It was just me and my friends drinking in the basement.
Cool.
And fast forward about 6 months later, I did the first road show. And now it's pretty much, they're all road shows.
Yeah.
And it's like sitting down with brewers and different brewery reps, sitting down with bands, and it's kind of become its own monster.
Yeah, man.
I wasn't quite sure where it was going to go, and it's taken me a lot of really cool places. And getting to, you know, hang out at a brewery on an off day when the shop is closed up. Why do you guys close on Sunday?
Whenever our owner started the brewery, a little backstory of Yazoo, I'm not sure if you know about our backstory. We were started in 2003, and we were started by a husband and wife team, Linus and Lila Hall.
Mm-hmm.
They still own 100% of Yazoo. We don't have any bank loans, investors,
excellent,
board of directors. The two people that own every bit of Yazoo sleep in the same bed every night. So it affords us the luxury that a lot of folks don't have to just do what we think makes sense and fits our vibe. And when Linus and Lila started, they brewed their first batch of beer October 23rd, and they had their first child 60 days later. And they never planned on having a tap room, but Metro Nashville said that we needed to have a retail space because it was in codes. So old brewery was in such a crappy area. They're like, all right, we'll build something out. They built a place. It was absolute minimum size that you would need, absolute minimum hours, and the most basic of things for them to operate the most shortest number of hours of days, and that was it. And 4 months later is a line out the door. And if you were here yesterday in our tap room, you will see the circus that is here on Friday, Saturdays because of bachelorette parties and all that. So for us, we're open limited days and hours because we never want any of the bars and restaurants to feel like we're their competitors.
Okay.
And we don't want anybody to feel like we're undercutting their price. We're more expensive on six packs, on kegs, on everything else. But if people want to come and see the place, that's why we don't have TVs. We don't do trivia, songwriters nights. They're just beer and people.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can't, in my opinion, and to each his own, man, and I get it. People, especially like Chicago, the more hyper local and competitive areas, and that's what you need to survive. But for us, Linus and Lila never based Yazoo on needing a tap room to survive.
Okay.
So this is all just a bonus. So we actually have this property that went on the market about a month ago for sale that they're actively looking. They have about 6 acres that will stay here in Nashville and probably move to a spot that's about 6 acres so we can move production, move the Embrace the Funk facility in-house, and then build a tap room. They were down in Jester King, Linus and Lila were, about a year ago down in Texas, and really loved the feel of that, of like open area where people can kind of spread out.
We were just in Texas about a month ago. Didn't make it to Austin this trip. Hit some other breweries while we were down there, but Jester King is like next trip down. We're going there for sure.
So between that and the Belgian courtyards and stuff too, it's just like everything. I don't know. I guess it's the bar rescue world where everything has to be scripted. But we kind of feel like there's a lot of freedom to where, like, dude, just move the table over. If you got more people, it's all good. Hey, do y'all want to go out, hang out over there or whatever? And it's been good for this space, but now it gets so packed. We at times don't have time to really slow down and talk to everybody we want to engage with beer because if you do, you know, you can do X amount, but would you much rather do a quarter of that and have more quality relationships and interactions with people? And us being in a place where we don't have a certain par level of numbers or sales that we need to hit, it's just all about kind of enjoying the ride, you know, where we're at. So that's kind of a little bit, you know, as we work through some of the beers, you'll see, you know, our beers, we don't come out with a new beer, with the exception of Embrace the Funk line. We really don't come out with one for our regular line of beers that frequent, just because we're just trying to make our beers as consistent as possible and be as consistent as possible with supply. So, and I guess it's more of, we want to be defined by like the people that are coming in here. Yeah. So weirdest thing when people come in, like, well, who's your target demo? I'm like, I don't know, dude. Who's here today?
Yeah.
You know, it's like beer? Yeah, 65-year-old retired African-American couple or 21, 22-year-old Vanderbilt students on a date. I don't know what to tell you, man.
Yeah.
You know, so not saying I'm trying to be everything to everybody, but you, I think if you do a good enough job and create a good enough template, people will fill out the rest.
Definitely.
I mean, the next beer you have in front of you, segue into that, is our Gerst Amber.
Okay.
Gerst was the oldest brewery in Nashville. Started in the 1800s.
You're representing.
Yeah, man.
The T-shirt today.
We started brewing that beer about 5 years ago, and there's a couple of brothers that own the local Gerst House. It's a German restaurant here, and they own one in Evansville, Indiana. They own like six other breweries, and they own the rights to Gerst beer. So when the Gerst family tried to shut the brewery down, it was like four city blocks big. It was huge. And it closed in 1954. They went into the restaurant business. When Linus and Lila got started, he approached the Gerst and said, hey, man, you know, or the Chandler brothers that own it, and said, hey, you know, one day they were having it brewed up in Pittsburgh at Iron City Brewery. And he's like, hey, one day I hope we're in a position where we can bring Gerst back to Nashville, because I feel like it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And a little over five years ago, we sat down with them and said, hey, we're in a spot. Do you think, you know, we can brew enough to supply your restaurants if you're cool with that? And they're like, great. So we sat down and nailed down a recipe that they remember being as close to Gerst. Ran with it. 6 months later, we never pushed it. 6 months later, other bars and restaurants were like, hey, man, can we get Gerst?
Yeah.
And we're like, well, I didn't think you would, but cool, dude. Yeah. We'll brew more. 6 months later, people were like, man, if I could get a six-pack of that to take back or to drink, man, that would be awesome. We're like, all right. So we went and got some of the old artwork, which is what this is. We didn't reinvent anything.
Yeah.
Updated it. And within the last 60, 90 days, Gerst is now, within 5 years, our number one beer for the company.
That's awesome.
And we have yet to ever push it or market it, or
if it's quality, do with it sells it.
Yeah.
Itself.
Well, I mean, as you know, in Nashville, and you probably saw down where y'all had lunch, has been in town. This is a long neck town, dude. People like to drink.
Yeah.
When they come to town, they like to drink it during the day, at night, at all times. They like to drink, and it's a drinking town. And making a beer that makes it easy for people to do that and support something that's local.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we didn't go out with an express intent to say, like, we're going to something a little bit like a target a Bud Light drinker, and it's like, well, dude, there's already a Bud Light drinker. They don't need another you know. So that's when we came up with that recipe, and it's been really, really good. But it's one of those things where it's like, you know, just trying to make it as approachable as possible without, you know, trying to cater.
Embrace the Funk series. They're great. You can't drink them all day.
Oh, no.
You'll tear your stomach
up, yeah.
You know, with the acidity and everything. So, yeah, you need a beer that's more sessionable.
Yeah.
You know, that you can just have.
Have you ever had any friends come down for Embrace the Funk Fest?
I think so.
You ever heard of it? You ever heard anybody talk about it?
No, but I guess I can guarantee. I know a couple guys who I'm sure have been to it. But yeah, I have not seen much from that. Like I said, Dark Lord Days, that's the big one in our neck of the woods.
You should plan on coming out.
Yeah, gone to that.
At the end of April next year will be Embrace the Funk Fest, leading into Craft Brewers Conference that will be in Nashville next year.
Okay.
So make plans. I'd love to have you down. But anybody else, you know, especially of listeners, the reason why I bring that up is because what you're saying is that people can't drink a lot of sours, wild ales in a setting. They like to try a lot of different beers. Mm-hmm. So we started, this would be year number six for Embrace the Funk Fest, and we thought, well, we don't have to do another beer festival, because we get to a point, man, I've done about 1,000 of them.
I'm kind of about burnout.
I'm had my fill. And we decided we were not going to do another lemonade stand beer festival where you stand behind a table. Well, I stand behind a table and
give me the tickets.
You just give a line and then I give you a beer, blah, blah, blah. Instead, we wanted to just throw a big ass party to do whatever we wanted.
Okay.
So the way ours is set up in comparison to most, and it's a little bit of a shock to people because they don't know how to act when they come in, is that we limit the tickets. I think we had 550 people this year. The first couple, we've never increased tickets more than 50 people from one year to the next. The way we have it set up is that you check in, you show up, doors open, and when you get in, people are a bit confused for the first 30 minutes of what the hell's going on.
Okay.
Because there is a lot going on, but there's not. We don't have set areas set up for beer to be poured. Mm-hmm. We have everything from 5, 7-year-old Canty on there to stuff that the brewery did, that other breweries around the country did, that only did one or two cases of, or one six barrel. But we never asked for anything more than like a six barrel of any beer. Mm-hmm. But if somebody just has a case, friends of ours, you know, whether it be, you know, New Belgium or Avery or, Rare Barrel, any of them, that they could send out, that we do trade outs for their events or whatever, they just send them. And the best part about it is most of these beers, I'm not the hardcore beer trader. I don't know, like, back of my hand what the trade value is.
Yeah, I don't do the beer trading.
Yeah.
Either my old co-host does, and that's how we would get some of these ones, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
And, you know, anytime I have certain people on, I know they're bringing some out-of-region stuff, and I just get to reap benefits and try
so,
it.
So what we do with Embrace the Funk Fest is we have a whole beer stage in two or three locations. So at any given time, there's four to five different beers being poured at four to five different random locations.
Okay.
And that may just be, I grabbed a case of beer randomly out of the back of the truck, don't know what it is, went to a random spot, set it down, started opening them, a line formed, poured through it, done. All right. As soon as I got through with that, 5 minutes later, somebody else does it. And it goes on like that all day long. We don't ever.
So it's not like, I got to go over here at this time.
We never publish the list. Okay. No, we never tell anybody what breweries are going to be speaking, what beers are going to be there. No one even knows what beers we're bringing ourselves.
Go with the flow.
Yeah, you go with the flow. And last year we spent close to $3,000 just on funky, wild, dirty cheeses. The only line that we had last year was for cheese. Wow. And that was just because it's just, I mean, we went through 110 pounds of like really, the type of cheese you try it and you're like, oh, God, man, you got to try this.
Yeah,
you know, one of those that you would never buy yourself.
We've had some beers like that, too.
Yeah, and then we had foods all catered in. Everything is all included.
Nice.
You're going to, and once people get in after 30 minutes, they realize, people haven't been there before, we're going to get plenty of food.
Yeah.
We can eat three, four times throughout the 5 hours. We don't have to pay for anything else. They're not trying to sell us T-shirts or glassware or any of these things. Everything's all included, and it's very interesting dynamic that after about 5 hours, the party just winds down and people go home.
Yeah.
It's not like we never have to kick anybody out. We never have to say, party's over.
Yeah.
It's just like after that time frame of flow, it just turned into a big party. And something I think that we're all very, very proud of, because at the end of the event, it's so anticlimactic that it's like everybody just kind of, it's kind of like Thanksgiving, you know, everybody leaves fat and happy. And they're like, because the ticket price has been $50 for the last 5 years.
Okay.
And this year, this year's the first year we'll probably ever go up on ticket prices.
Okay.
And it won't be that much at all. But we've always wanted to set that precedent, and that is that we can over-deliver. Every dollar we make off ticket sales, we spend that plus $5,000 to $10,000 back into the event. Because if you bring people in, and especially if you're using those as marketing or any of that, it's like, dude, if you can over-deliver to this core group of people that you just really want to hang out with anyway, it's like, why would you not leave everybody, have everybody leave and go like, I didn't see that coming. That was really cool.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm guessing there's not too much negative feedback.
No. You know, the best part, too, is there's really not a lot of social media chatter during the day.
Okay.
During the event, because people don't have time. They're too busy of like, oh, shit, what's going on over here?
Yeah.
What's going on over here? Did you see what they just, this cheese they just brought out? Dude, they brought out two whole pigs. Check it out. Do you see the hot dog cart that just popped up? That was pretty cool. You know, and just stuff like that we do throughout the whole day. So if y'all get a chance, man, definitely get it on your calendar.
Definitely. It's something that sounds like a kick-ass
But just
time.
Made me think about it when you were mentioning the sours, dude. Because, you know, no one's ever going to get falling down drunk at a sour beer festival.
No,
dude's going to have to eat two boxes of Tums if that's what he wants to do.
That's what you're going to do.
You can chug that Canton if you want, dude. It's just going to be kind of uncomfortable for the next hour, you know?
Well, we like to embrace the funk on Drunken Lullabies, and we've got some funky music for you this week. Our band of the week is called Republican Hair. They are a Nashville band. The lead songwriter is a pretty famous, notable Nashville songwriter. He's wrote award-winning songs for people like Miranda Lambert and I believe Florida Georgia Line, Little Big Town, these kind of people. But he just wants to let his inner funky white boy out on his band. So we're going to play one of my favorite songs from Republican Hair. I hold this song near and dear to my heart because it's about the purple one. I'm talking about Prince Rogers Nelson. This song is called Miss Prince, and it is here on Drunken Lullabies.
Give me a little bit of a big fan. I'll miss you like a color of purple, like 1999. Little red Corvette doing some calls. I'll miss you like let's go crazy. I'll miss you like kiss, but I don't miss you like 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 I miss Pimps.
I do miss Prince, and we're gonna go see Paisley Park in October and go see his, I guess literally his final resting place, because I guess his urn is on display.
Oh,
there.
That's too cool.
So
I was just wondering if anybody ever asked Prince whether he was actually that forward thinking about the song 1999. He was just like, man, the royalties I'm gonna get for this in about 10 to 15 years is gonna
right?
be awesome. You know, it's like, what do you think we should
call
it?
Call it 29.99.
Yeah, exactly. He was just like, nah, this is what we're gonna do. Trying to research some of the guys from the band to see who was in there, man. It's a small world in Nashville, but
yeah,
you know how it goes. What do you think about the Gerst, man?
It is like you said, very very
going
drinkable,
for.
And I can see why it's a popular choice among you guys. Have a name for your drinkers, at least according to Untappd.
Because
you get a badge when
you
check in.
The Yazooligans.
That's a tough one to say.
Yeah, well, it's like your own nickname. You can't give it to you. Can't give it to yourself. And we would have never created a group of people called the Yazooligans. They just kind of, it all came together, and they're a pretty good group of regulars that are here on a regular basis.
Okay.
So it's really good folks, man. Like I said, that's the best part about this whole industry.
It's fun to
folks.
Have, you know, I call my listeners the Drunkomaniacs.
Yeah.
So, you know.
That is. That's
you feel like you're a part of something.
I know, man. Know? I mean, I think pro wrestling's the one set the precedent for that, of everything having your name, starting with the Hulkamaniacs, man.
Yep, that's, and we're wrestling fans. Several people have been on the show, big wrestling fans, so I've had wrestlers on the show to drink
really?
With me. Did you grow up as a big WCW? Because we're in the South, so this is like NWA.
I'm going even deeper, dude. I got to go even deeper. There was so I grew up in a town of 500 people in Arkansas, and didn't really have that many TV channels, but there's very rarely any wrestling on. But I used to go to the grocery store with my mother. While she walked around and shopped, I would read all the wrestling magazines. And that's back before Vince started consolidating all of the wrestling federations. So that was like the original NWA wrestlers, SWA. It was, I mean, all just like the different factions from different areas. You had your Texas guys. Then you had like your South guy. But there, if you go back and look at what Vince did, I've always wanted to ask Vince McMahon that question too.
Yeah.
About like how, you know, what was the point of reference where you had the vision to consolidate all those?
So many people off by turning it into almost a monopoly.
Yeah, but I mean, to have the balls to go around to take all these different independent federations and add them all together, because they were all bootstrapped anyway. It's not like he had to spend that much money, but to organize them and get all the talent, which to have that much forward thinking of that much talent.
Yeah.
Can you imagine like doing that with, you know, taking like 110 breweries that were all making less than 1,000 barrels and going and consolidating all them? Like, all right, this dude is this guy over here. He's going to be our focus for sours right now. But we got New England IPA guys coming up, man. Yeah. New England IPA guy and West Coast IPA guy. We're going to be putting all those together.
He's not ready for the big league, so we're going to send him down a developmental.
Yeah, how cool would that be, man? You can't say that it's not a great idea. I just thought about that, man. That would be a great idea.
Trademark it.
I know, so, man.
We'll revisit in a few years after the ball's rolling a little bit.
Brew Federation. Does anybody got Brew Federation registered? I'll check Instagram.
I don't know, but once it happens, you know you got a podcast to talk about.
I'll save it on Snapchat. You get the other platform. All right, you get the website.
What is what's the next one we got?
The next one we have is our Daddy O Pilsner. Okay. Our owner Linus, his grandfather was a college football Hall of Famer out of Ole Miss, and very first quarterback in the NFL to throw for 100 passes.
Okay.
Very first quarterback in the NFL to be a Rookie of the Year and MVP in the same year. As you can tell by these stats, this was way back in the day.
Yeah.
He was originally drafted by the Cleveland. Cleveland franchise and was the first quarterback for the 49ers. But talking back in the late 30s, early 40s, mm-hmm. he left that, went and served for a few years for World War II in the Navy, and got back out and moved back to Mississippi. And all the grandkids called him Daddy-O.
Okay.
And this is our Daddy-O Pilsner. Linus wanted to brew a Pilsner that would have been, his grandfather since passed away, and he always wanted to brew one that was kind of like that really good throwback feel to it. Mm-hmm. And something that I think American brewers are starting to find out more and more today, and I'm sure they've known it for a while. And as much as everybody wants to shit talk Bud Miller or Coors or anything, mm-hmm. making a consistent Pilsner day in, day out is tough. It's very tough for yeast viability for a multitude of reasons. And we knew this going in, and that's why it took us years and years to nail down a recipe that we were very, very proud of. In the meantime, lemon drop hops came available mm-hmm. and really added a lot to what we were going for, because we didn't want another Pilsner that broke off to that sharp, kind of dirty, funky finish.
Okay.
Because, you know, Pilsners usually have like this arc. It's a shallow arc, but the arc starts out of the flavor. Unlike, you know, you take a IPA or even an amber or something like that, you get three different layers between the mm-hmm. beginning, nose, and then your middle, your mouthfeel flavor, and then your finishing flavor. But Pilsners and lagers, for the most part, all have a kind of shallow arc. But that is pretty damn difficult to continue from the front of the beer to the back. And I think the lemon drop in this one gives you just enough citrus to the finish, but you're keep anticipating that funky, dry, skunky finish to it, and it never arrives, which I love about it.
So, more while you wait.
Yeah, man. And that one I'm very, very proud of. And I'm proud of all our beers. But that one, like I said, I know, and I've never brewed myself. I've witnessed it, and just the elbows deep of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been in this business for 18 years, and when I started, you only could go do what you're doing now, which is visit breweries and talk to people and see what it is. I mean, the generation now that has access to it's a difference. I use this analogy of the generation that grew up being able to play poker online.
Okay.
Before that, only way you could get skills of playing poker was to sit in front of a dude in a smoky-ass room most of the time and play poker for a million hands. Now you can play a million hands in a matter of like a week.
Watch it on TV.
Yeah, all that. But it's the same way with beer now. Before, if you went to the bookstore to look for books on beer, you had a few Michael Jackson books and, you know, a few different things, random ones.
Not the King of
Pop. Yeah, yeah.
Not that Michael
A few Jackson. Random ones. And then outside of that, there wasn't a lot of resources other than going to talk to people and visit breweries.
Right.
But now you have all access on your phone, you know, to be able to check it out to the Untappd rating and stuff it is. But it doesn't, like, replace this, you know, coming into the physical location and see what it's all about. So I just want to, it's very encouraging of people actually getting out and about and everything. But like I said, the Pilsner is one of those ones of just seeing, knowing what it takes and nailing down like the lager yeast and having that viable throughout the whole year. So that one started to hit its stride pretty good for us.
We're both hop heads, but I mean, just a little bit ago before we did the show, we were down the road. I got a Pilsner, a local Pilsner, while we were sitting there waiting, killing some time, the Wiseacre Tiny Bomb.
Yeah, out of Memphis.
Because, like, you know, sometimes I can't do a double IPA. I want like a 4.5%, something that's just crisp and easy drinking, and, you know, like something my dad could probably appreciate. Yeah. Some of these are a little over his taste, but he surprised me. He likes sours the first time we tried them. It took me a year.
So. Really? That's why we usually take any of the festivals we actually do anymore. That's why we usually take a keg of pale ale. Mm. We have, you know, crazy wild shit, but you know there's going to be an hour or two toward the end of the festival. It's like, dude, I want a pale ale.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess there's a handful of other people here that
you
like
gotta
a pale ale.
You got to throw them in the middle sometimes just to clear the palate and just pump the brakes a little bit before you hit another Imperial Stout. You know?
It's like going to Falling Rock Tap House in Denver during a Great American Beer Festival, and it's like, dude, just have one Kolsch on tap. Because everybody's just drinking these hot bombs and crazy barrel-aged shit all week long, and you're just like, all right, let me just have a Kolsch, man. Let me just slow down a little bit. It's going to be all right. It's going to be a long week. So
you mentioned you've been in the industry 16 years?
Yeah, I started in 2001, going on 16, 17 years.
Now, you said you're from Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the accent sounded familiar. My boss is from Arkansas.
Really?
Huge Razorbacks fan. So how did you get to where you are now? Did you start in the industry in Arkansas?
No, I grew up laying asphalt for the family business. Like I said, in a town of about 500 people. Graduating class in 19, so it's a good place to be from.
Yeah.
Altus, Arkansas. It's where that reality show, The Simple Life, with Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie was filmed.
Oh, okay.
When they wanted to send them to the opposite of their world, they sent them to my hometown. But I just got tired of working for the family business. I do miss the business, the family business part of it I don't really miss. But I had a cousin that ran away from home and ended up in Middle Tennessee, and we just kind of stayed in touch.
Okay.
And just like, hey, man, I'm tired of the small town life after I graduated high school. Went through a couple brief semesters of community college. My Uncle Mike was a home brewer growing up, too.
Everybody has an Uncle Mike.
I know,
is
man.
Is he the crazy uncle?
He's since passed away, but I can honestly say if it wasn't for some of the thought processes and mindsets that my Uncle Mike gave me, then I probably wouldn't be sitting here today.
Yeah.
I mean, just that uncle is like, dude, you know you don't have to stay here, right? Like, yeah. What do you mean? Like, you can go anywhere. You can always come back here. Mm-hmm. It will always be here. It will never change. Yeah. You can take off. Because he served in the military, was in Germany, and made the rounds and stuff where he ended up coming back home. But, yeah, he's a home brewer. I've never had beer as good as what my Uncle Mike brewed. But always interested in that. And then I moved out here and put Pepsi on the shelf for a couple of years, and I heard about a distributor that all they sold was craft beer and imports. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, that would be cool.
That sounds better than Pepsi.
Yeah, man. And I hired on as a truck driver. And thinking that I would, you know, do that for about 5 years before I got a sales position. And 30 days later, some guy, did something stupid. And they're like, hey, do you want a sales position? And I'm like, I don't know anything about it. Sure, I'll take it. And then, you know, 3, 4, 5 years later, they're like, hey, your boss did something stupid also. Would you like his job? And I'm like, I've never managed people in my life. Yeah, of course I'll take that job. And then I met Linus and Lila along the way when they started the brewery in 2003, and we just became good friends. And in 2008, they just asked me to come on board. And, you know, it's pretty much just handling whatever needs to get done. I'd say sales and marketing manager, but it's a small business.
Right.
If you work at a brewery below 150 employees and you think that something's not your job, you're probably not going to hang around very long. Or everybody else is going to hate your ass and never tell you, you know. So if glass falls over, help with that.
I was just
going to
say, you're sweeping the floors.
Dude,
like
it doesn't matter.
Else.
Yeah, man. Like I said, it's everybody's all hands on deck. I mean, and our owners, like I said, them still being very, very active. Linus being from Mississippi, and, you know, he did a couple summers painting barges on the Mississippi River.
Okay.
I'm not sure if that sounds miserable enough to y'all, but just think there's no shade on the river in the Mississippi, and painting barges in the middle of the summer is absolutely miserable.
My Uncle Mike works on barges.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Dude, that's awesome. Yeah, you have to be a pretty salty guy to work on barges.
He's a character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine was too, man.
Motorcycle riding, beer drinking.
Oh, God. Uncle Mike was, dude, he just, like I said, just, my aunt was like, you drink too much. Here's a book, learn how to brew beer, and that's what he did. So, but yeah, then I just ended up here, you know, and been doing this ever since, man. It's, you know, it's been a good ride. I beat it to death, but Nashville, I always say, is more of a time than a place.
Mm-hmm.
Just because the collection of people that are here right now, it's just so easy to do business. And in comparison to what I hear about a lot of other markets where you don't really have a bar of entry, you know, as long as you just do good shit by good people, you don't really have to worry about a lot, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not perfect, and, you know, we're not growing by 50% every year, but at the end of the day, it's just all about kind of enjoying the ride.
You're making
a
living.
Yeah.
You're enjoying what you do.
The perks don't suck.
No.
Like I said, I'm about to go to an awesome burger joint opening up, you know, here after this. So.
And I've seen you on TV.
Oh, really?
The Zane Lamprey.
Oh, did you watch that one, man?
Yeah.
Dude, that's been a while, hasn't it?
It was.
Yeah, and still Nancy that was in that, she actually works for our distributor now. So
we
talk about that on a regular basis. So, but yeah, that was a trip, man. Ooh, I thought I'd drink a lot, man.
I know, right? We've been watching his shows because I was a Three Sheets fan.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had Drinking Made Easy, and then he did Chug.
Yeah.
Which was essentially the same kind of show. And she's like, he has your dream job, doesn't he? I'm like, aside from that he has to drink a lot of hard alcohol, because I don't really do hard alcohol.
Yeah.
I stick with beer for the most part. I'm like, yeah, you're traveling the world. You get to have fun and be a dumbass.
Yeah.
And you're on TV, and you drink all the time, and you don't have to pay.
Yeah.
That's a pretty solid,
yeah,
solid job.
I always thought the real winner, the real talented people, and Zane's very talented, was if he didn't do it, who all did his production and editing?
Yeah.
You know, the editing of all the information. All the sounds and everything to make you feel like you're a part of it.
Oh, we have a little Pleeplius stuffed monkey that...
Yeah, he did a brewery tour with us.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he was in all the pictures she was taking on Instagram and whatnot.
That's awesome.
And now he just hides. It's almost like an elf on the shelf mm-hmm. in our house. And her son will take him and hide him somewhere, and we have to find Pleeplius.
Oh, nice, man.
So,
it's a good move. I listened to a podcast, Bert Kreischer's podcast with Zane Lamprey.
Okay.
He did one a few months ago. I just listened to it where he has a Kickstarter for a hoodie, I think, that he's pushing.
Yeah. Where you can store all the beers and stuff.
It's like the most successful fashion Kickstarter in history, you know, or something like that. But, I mean.
Doesn't surprise me.
Dude's a hustler, man.
Yeah.
I gotta give him props, man.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So, I got to give props. What are we drinking here?
That is Sue. That's our Imperial Smoke Porter.
I was pretty sure. But I've been thrown before by judging a beer by its
appearance.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, shit, that has way more coffee in it than it looks like it should.
So you're still perplexed that white stout trend never took off?
I don't know. Like I said, it's
you ever had, have you had one of those, right?
Yeah, I think
you're
I had one.
We're trying too hard here, man.
Yeah.
I know how the trick's done, David Copperfield. Calm down. but Sue is one that we just started putting in 12-ounce bottles, but it was in bigger bottles before. Probably one of the main beers outside of our Embrace the Funk that we're most known for. But it has a really good slightly smoked flavor. The malts are smoked with cherry wood. Has really good flavor to it. We actually finished second, won a silver medal at GABF a handful of years ago for that one, for that beer. And as I tell everybody, if you're going to finish second and it's to the most awarded beer in GABF history, that doesn't really, you're good. I mean, Alaskan Smoke Porter to finish second to that one, I mean, that's, I'll take that all day, every day. So it's a pretty big honor, and I'm very, very proud of this beer. Our guys
now, is this named after the Johnny Cash song?
Yeah, we're just big Johnny Cash song fans, and Linus came up with that name.
So,
and my mother's middle name is Sue. We didn't realize how many people called their dad or grandfather Daddy-O until we named that beer.
Yeah.
We didn't realize how many people's mother or grandmother's names were Sue until we named that beer. So,
well, it's funny that we're drinking a beer that has a woman's name, because the next song we're going to play is a woman's name. So this seems as good a time as any
to
transition into that. You know, I sometimes those segues are not as seamless as I'd like them to be, but when they just unfold naturally, you got to go with it. So here's Republican Hair with Jody. This is the first song from them that I ever heard. Hope you guys dig it. It is on their album High and Tight, another Hair reference. So here it is, Republican Hair with Jody on Drunken Lullabies.
She got two tattoos, shoplifted shoes, and over a million views. I got the Harvard blues, chess club dues, and I don't know what to do. Because I wanna see her closer, closer. I wanna know who knows her. I wanna be the chosen one to take her home.
Don't leave me la 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 lonely, lonely.
All right, and that was Republican Hair with Jody. You guys didn't hear the song, so you don't get that reference, but that's what the chorus sounds like. You'll hear it when you listen to the final product. So, the beer, Sue, that we are enjoying right now, you know, smoked porter.
Mm-hmm.
Not many people's go-to type of beer.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have every so often. What's your go-to style?
I usually drink a good bit of our pale ale. Okay. I mean, that and we just finished up summer with our goes, and that's been one we've been drinking a good bit of, just because a little bit lighter bodied, you know, very sessionable. When you sit down and drink five or six of them, it just really varies the mood, and you can tell by the kind of extensive selection of our core beers that we have. Mm-hmm. We're kind of all over the place ourselves. So, but our crew, we drink a good bit of our pale ale. You know, I mean, it's a kind of unique situation, because a pale ale in its local market is like rocks, but outside of its home market, it's just another pale ale. And I think a lot of people have that issue, but that's why I didn't pour y'all. We make two phenomenal IPAs also. I didn't pour y'all one of those, just because
we've seen them on the show.
Yeah, you know, sure enough, people throwing IPAs and stuff at you. I mean, I'm very proud of the ones that we have. Our Hop Perfect IPA, we started about 10 years ago. We wanted to make a pretty year-round IPA, but we couldn't get the hops we wanted. That's when prices went from $4 to $20 overnight.
Yeah.
And so we just started changing the recipe. Every batch, we had a different number and collection of hops. We brewed over 86 different batches of beer.
Are they all individually on Untappd? You have to log all?
We wreaked some major havoc on all the beer rating sites for the longest time. I'm sure they're happy as shit that we stopped doing that, because it's about 10 pages full on Beer Advocate and Rate Beer.
Wow.
For Untappd. But yeah, you can dig through them if you want. Untappd really didn't hit its stride till we were probably about number 50 or 60.
Okay.
But we did 86 different batches, ranging in hops from one upwards of 11 hops per batch. And we used over 55 different varietals of hops over that 10 years. So a lot of people are experimenting with the smaller batch, one-off stuff now. Mm-hmm. But we were doing ours at 40-barrel batches. So to have it takes a pretty decent set of balls to put 40 barrels of an experimental IPA out. Anybody can do like 5-10 barrels of it. It's easy. You can blow through a bad one. But when you get to put out, we did one that was, we did 40 or 80 barrels of a fresh hop Sriracha Ace. IPA.
Interesting.
It was interesting, because you kept getting more and more of that pina colada coconut flavor as the beer aged, but it gave us some weird ass dreams, man. Yeah. I'm telling you, when you start to do that experimentation, especially with fresh hops, and you don't notice, all right, if you're just drinking one or two fresh hop beers, and I challenge anybody, any of your listeners, to go down this road.
Okay.
But Linus, our owner, and myself have had this happen 2 to 3 times, that if you go down a rabbit hole of about, I'll give you about a week to 2 weeks of consistently drinking fresh hop beers, you'll start getting some fucked up dreams, man.
I know one person,
specifically,
that's a friend of the show, and I'm going to call him out now and challenge him to do this, because he's a crazy motherfucker, and he probably will.
Yeah.
Brutal Eric.
I knew it.
Yeah.
If I know anybody that will, and he's a home brewer, Brutal Truth Brewing, we've drank many of his beers on the show. He's a crazy cat. So there you go, Eric. You got your challenge. And then I wanna hear what exactly.
After about 2 weeks, you need to just sit down and see. Linus, our owner, and myself, after our first run of fresh hop beers, we were just like, we did just independently. We were sitting in the office, and it was like, it's on the last keg of that. I really hate to see it go. I've enjoyed drinking that. And as Linus and my conversation knew, that was following a dead moment, and that's cool. We're fine leaving it there. About 30 seconds after that, he turns around and is like, I'm really not that unhappy about it going. I've been having some fucked up dreams, man, to be honest. I don't know what it is. And I'm like, dude, me too. And I'm like, this has been like a trip,
now,
man.
Wait, you know, they weren't the same dream.
No, they? No, no.
That'd be really weird.
No, we weren't an episode of the Black Mirror here.
It was
very vivid dreams of like fresh hop beer. We noticed it with the first one we did, which was Hop Project number 10, and then we noticed it with number 21, which is a Sriracha Ace one also. Mm-hmm. But we have all the brew sheets for all of them all the way back to number 5.
Okay.
I want to say that's about 10 years ago when that number 5 was brewed. Because the first 3 or 4, we were not that smart to say it was going to be this big, huge project for a better sense of the words. And but man, when we started hitting our stride, there was some that were just like you air punch the air and you tried it. And then in other words, you're like, I don't really like this broccoli in this one. But it was just a lot of new hops experimental at the time. A lot of people were throwing out there. We're like, who, shit, let's just swing away.
Throw shit against the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah.
And,
So our beer we rolled that into about 4 years ago, we came up with a recipe for a beer called Hop Perfect. There, it was our 10-year IPA that we use a good bit of Citra and Mosaic. And our hop supplier's like, oh, yeah, dude, I can get you all that, all you need in about 3.5 years. So we're like, well, I hope people still want this in 3.5 years. So about a year ago when we rolled out Hop Perfect IPA, our brewers were really adamant against that name. But in case y'all ever want to challenge yourself, just try to find a hoppy a name for an IPA these days that doesn't have hop, bitter, alpha, or something in the name of it. And we just more wanted to stress it. Like, we don't think it's the most perfect IPA ever brewed. But for us and the styles that we like to drink, we like it because we have a little bit of wheat grain in the base recipe of it that lightens up the body, so it's not that tacky, scrape your tongue type IPA. And then we have another one called Hoppery that is made out of mostly Centennial, Columbus, Chinook, some of the traditional style hops too, that was about 7.5%. So, but yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. I guess it's a few of those, you know, industry rumors that more hops makes some awesome, automatically a better beer, or because it was barrel-aged or a limited number is going to make it a better beer, you know? It's like, no, just making it a better beer makes it a better beer, you know?
Exactly.
But what about y'all? What have y'all been drinking lately? What have you had? What have you had either here in Nashville or just in general
that
stands out in your mind over the last month?
There's one in particular. Yesterday, we were at Southern Grist, and they had, I believe it was called Melon Bowl. Best fucking watermelon beer I've ever had in my life.
Watermelons, people, it's hard to nail down, man.
It was a Goza, because usually it's all extracts and synthetic, and it tastes that way.
Are you trying to tell me people aren't brewing pumpkin beers with real pumpkin?
Nah, right. All
right.
So, in our area, we're like the pumpkin capital of the world, like Libby's pumpkin that everybody buys for Thanksgiving dinner and stuff.
Oh, is that where that's
at? I think
at?
80% of the country's pumpkin distribution comes from 20 minutes away from our house.
That would be the only reason why I think a brewery should brew a pumpkin is if they lived within that close.
We've got some friends that are big fans of pumpkin beer. Black Cat Chad in particular, he gets excited every time it's pumpkin beer season.
But he does know they're not really sawing the woman in half, right?
Yeah.
Okay, just checking to make sure. It's like, that's when the pumpkins that start arriving in July. I'm like, dude, where'd you get those pumpkins at, man? Are you going to, like, Greenland to get pumpkins? What's up?
Right.
You know, it's like, it's the secret in the industry. And I'm not just saying this because we don't brew a pumpkin and we never plan on it, but the amount of people that are just brewing a base beer and dumping, spice flavor, just a clear liquid into it just to spice it. It's like, dude, I get the technical part and the respect part of it, but if you get to a certain point where you're just dumping it in there just to cater to a certain part of the market, you know, I mean.
Well, and that market got very oversaturated.
Quick.
Everybody was coming out with a pumpkin beer to the point to where our local bottle shop, Broadway Liquors in Pekin, refused to order pumpkin beer the next year, except for Schlafly, because they still had leftovers from, you know,
like I don't think they're
6 months later, clearing out bombers for $2 each. I mean, they're selling them at a loss just to get rid of it.
And I don't think they're an anomaly. I think more distributors and more retail accounts are starting to realize that too, man. It's just, you know, that, I mean, it's that wave is just kind of, you know, kind of settled into, like you said, Schlafly. They do a good job. I mean, Dogfish does a good job.
I like O'Fallon.
I'm not saying that all of them are bad.
I don't know if O'Fallon comes down here or not.
Do.
Okay.
They do, yeah.
I like their pumpkin beer. But yeah, you know, it's just that time of year, and you'll see it for a little while, and then it'll disappear, and you kind of forget about it. And,
yeah.
But yeah, it's we were talking about beers that we've had down here. We're talking about fads, trends, all that kind of stuff. We went to Beer Did Iris, the New England juicy IPAs. I'm a fan. I love IPAs. I'm a hophead. I like juicy IPAs. But I told Brianna while we're there, because we did half pours of the entire draft list. So that way, because they didn't have like standard flights or whatever. So I'm like, we'll do a half pour of everything and then we just swap when we're halfway through. We tried them all and I'm like, they're all good. But if you ask me which beer did I drink 3 beers ago and which beer am I drinking now, I couldn't tell you the difference. They all start to taste the same especially when drank in quick succession.
Yeah.
Which,
like New England IPAs, I relate it to the Snapchat of beers.
Yeah.
You've got a certain small window that they are going to be best and consumed. And if you
Fresher
try to, yeah, if you yeah. push it any further than that, it's like we kicked it around. A couple of our guys were like, man, we should do a New England IPA. But mm-hmm. We started just digging in to it online. And we did a couple pilot batches of them too. But online, all the reviews fall in one or two categories. Best beer ever had in my life, or what's this shit floating in my beer?
Right.
And the beer y'all are having right now, to segue into that, is our Yazoo Hefe.
Oh,
and
okay.
You know, it's the cloudy.
This was the first beer I had from you guys.
Thanks, man.
So,
I hope you liked it. I mean, we've come to realize that we're one of the few breweries left in America that are brewing like a traditional German style wheat, mm-hmm. which another one isn't that easy to do. Because if you get a little bit of under fermentation on it, you get a lot of like a sulfuric, like well water type of smell and aroma if it doesn't ferment out. Yeah, it's not good at all, man. I mean, it goes like hot fart to juicy fruit, and there's a fine line of what one is going to smell or taste like.
Is that an upcoming beer from you guys, Hot Fart?
Yeah, Hot Fart and Juicy Fruit. Okay. It's a bit wordy. We're trying to pare it down. I think it's going to go
with... Just go with the initials.
I'm thinking about going with that A-team font, with the period after each one,
there
just
the
abbreviations of it. But we're going to do it backwards. We're only going to do the last letter of each one.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the only way we could find it that wasn't already taken.
Well, I'm going to look forward to that one.
Yeah. No, and it's just like that one, we don't filter it either. But about once a month, you know, if somebody hasn't stored the keg upside down, they'll pour the first pint, and it looks mm-hmm. like a milkshake. And
right.
The beer's still great. I'll drink the shit out of it all day long.
But aesthetically.
People just appearance.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm Hefe is probably our fifth best-selling beer for the company, fifth or sixth. And outside of the tap room, it's by far number one. It's unbelievable how much Hefe we sell here at the tap room. And I think it's just because we have actually a larger female population that comes here in comparison to most other breweries. I think the best industry estimates are like 35% of craft drinkers are female, mm-hmm. whereas here on the weekends with all the bachelorette parties and everything else, we're probably running 55-60% female. So I'm not saying it's just women that love heavies, because I love the hell out of that. Ours, and I think especially you go to Germany. You know, very rarely you ever find a beer, and to the Germans' defense, that the beer tastes the same when you start the first drink mm-hmm. or the last drink of it. And that's kind of why Linus always has kind of designed a lot of our beers, to have that vibe to
it. Well,
them.
And with, I just got, I had a little hop burp, as I mm-hmm. call them, with, you know, the IPAs typically is what I get, and, you know, you can enjoy a good IPA for hours later. I just had a Hefe burp. And it was straight banana, and I'm not a huge banana guy.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty fucking good.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, you get a good bit of that. That's the one question we get is where we add the bananas to it. But if you get the fermentation just right on those, mm-hmm. and that Hefe yeast, and, you know, especially not filtering it, you get a good citrus and really good banana
yeah.
you know, flavor. Nothing over the top, but, yeah, that beer, my biggest issue I have with that one is only going to drink it in multiples of six.
Okay.
I mean, it's just... Very, very sessionable beer.
That you guys sell it that way.
Yeah, I know, man. We were going to go seven, but it just doesn't, the multiples aren't right. You know, so.
Another question in regards to this beer. Why didn't you guys come up with a different name instead of just calling it the Hefe license?
Because we're shitty at naming things.
Okay.
We're a lot better at making beer than we are naming
because,
them.
Because, I mean, you know, most of the other beers
have
a name. And, like, the first time I bought it, I was like, oh, well, you don't have to guess what kind of style this is.
Yeah, like I gotta tell everybody, our guys are a lot better at brewing beers than they are naming them.
Okay.
And it's like our Yazoo Spring is our Yazoo Spring Seasonal, and then Yazoo Summer is our Summer Seasonal, and then we make a fall lager.
You don't want to switch those up to mess with people.
Any guesses what our Winter Seasonal is?
Winter?
Yeah, Winter is Scotch Ale. But yeah, I mean, we just do that just because, I don't know, it's just a path of least resistance, you know. With the Yazoo Pale, with Dose, confuses people a little bit. But, you know, Gerst, it's a little bit there. But, I mean, I don't know, man. It's always amusing to me when I see people that have very in detail-oriented tap handles. I mean, it's like looking across that room right now. Y'all can't read what's on those.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've ordered them twice, you can see exactly which color is the one you're looking for, and that it's Yazoo.
I want the blue one.
Yeah, and people literally have this amount of time to look at a handle or something to figure that out. So that's the same way with our beers, too, with the names. And this is actually all the original artwork that our owner, Lila, created for all the labels.
Okay, that's a heavy one right there.
Yeah, those are actually all the original artwork that she did that we scanned in and kind of went from there. But, yeah, man, it's just one of those things. You know, Pale Dose and Hefe were there from the beginning, as you can see the similarities between those three.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just... the path of least resistance. We used to make a spring wheat, but after we took Heffy to the Great American Beer Festival in 2004 and won a gold medal, it's kind of like, we really don't need this spring wheat anymore. Yeah. And just kind of, we haven't made it since, you know.
Okay.
Heffy's kind of stuck out, you know. Yeah. I'm very proud of that one. The year that we won a gold medal for it was that we actually beat out Brooklyn for their Heffy, and that's where Linus, our owner, interned with Garrett. Before he started Yazoo in 2001, he was actually in New York during 9/11. You know, when all that went down, he was interning with Brooklyn at that point. So to really have the point of reference of him interning with Garrett, and Garrett actually found some of their old notes and mailed them to us about a year ago of when he was working there, of just, he was very, very hardcore, and I'm sure he still is, about sending Linus home with beers and coming back with, all right, if you're going to brew this, mm-hmm. what food are we going for with it?
Okay.
What's the point of reference that you're having for people to experience this beer instead of just drawing up a recipe just for the sake of doing it? So,
yeah.
Have y'all had any good food while you're in town?
I would say so. We tried. This trip was a little bit on a tight budget because we have another big road trip coming mm-hmm. up before too much longer. So we ate a little more fast food than what typically we would eat, but we did have a nice meal at Tailgate. Had some pizza there with some friends, had a flight, and then, shit, where else have we ate? I'm trying to think.
I don't know what that place was called. There were fish. There were dead animals.
Yeah, there everywhere. was a lot of dead animals on the walls, but they had a pond, like, in the middle of the restaurant.
Oh, yeah, Caney Fork Fish Camp.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they have really good catfish there.
Yeah, I had.
It's kind of an odd place,
I had
but yeah.
catfish.
Good folks.
What I have.
You have any plans of going up to Minneapolis anytime soon?
October.
All right, cool. Look up this band, Honky Tonk Itis, while you're up. Every state, one, their music's really good.
Okay.
But I used to do like a two-hour show for independent radio station here, and just beer and people and everything that I'd just pull off and put on a podcast. But we used to play all their music all the time because it was just a random CD I found at the radio station. Because everybody sends shit to radio stations.
Yeah.
I just found it. But they have like two or three CDs that every single song is about drinking.
Oh, okay.
But they're really good songs.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just really, really.
Tonkitis?
Yeah, is all the name right. of the.
I'll look them up.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll be an upcoming Drunken Lullabies Band of the Week. If they are, I will give you full credit, Neil. So.
No, dude, if you get a chance to. I actually just sent a message to their Facebook to their lead singer, and he was like, dude, I'd love to call on the show. But it's like they all have full time gigs. They don't plan on making it big. They just play like.
They're
maybe
content
like
with their role on the scene.
Like 5 to 10 gigs a year. But the music is all really good. It was one of those things that always stuck up in my mind. I'm like, how come these guys aren't playing like bars and beer festivals around the country, man? They're like,
we're
just
going to do our thing. There's a lot of good, you know, bar bands like that seem to hold steady. The Replacements were notorious for being kind of a sloppy band that was just amazing or an absolute train wreck. So,
yeah,
well, we've got... We don't have any songs from Honky Tonk Itis yet,
no, you're
but we have one more song from Republican Hair. We're going to close it out with a little ditty they call Birthday Suit. So if you're listening at home and you're by yourself and you want to dance in your birthday suit, by all means, I hope you've been doing the drinking game and that's what got you there. But whatever floats your boat, we're just going to play the song. So here we go. It's Republican Hair with Birthday Suit here on Drunken Lullabies.
1, 2, 3. Well, baby, I was born this week. Bird in the egg, I formed this week. Nothing quite like this to make me feel alive. Think back to the future past. Garden hose in the green grass. 2 years old, run around bare ass in the bright sunshine. Now it's put on your pants, put on your shirt, put on your tie, go to work. Keep wondering what I wear it for. I ain't gonna wear it anymore, no. Take it off, take it off. Woo-hoo. Take it off, take it off. Woo-hoo. Get on down to your birthday suit. Who cares who's watching you, yeah. Take it off, take it off. Woo-hoo. Take it off, take it off. Woo-hoo. Ain't nothing stopping you, so get on down to your birthday suit. Shame in your underwear. One more step and we'll be there. Just come with me.
in your birthday suit. Who cares who's watching you? Yeah. Nothing else to do, so get on down to your birthday suit. Get on down to your birthday suit. This way, it's how we procreate. Hey, hey, it's your birthday.
Take it off, take it off. Take it off, take it off.
Woo-hoo. Get on down to your birthday suit. Who cares who's watching you? Yeah.
Take it off, take it off.
Woo-hoo.
Take it off, take it off.
Woo-hoo. Ain't nothing stopping you, so get on down to your birthday suit.
Okay, and that was Birthday Suit. We all managed to remain fully clothed here at Yazoo.
Or did we?
Oh, they'll never know. I mean, the place is closed, so we can do what we want.
But. Or is it? Sorry, we just do this all day long. Just questioning everything.
All right, well, Neil, thank you very much for inviting us in here. Like I said, it's your day off. So I appreciate you take, well.
It's a beer business. Anybody thinks they have a day off, dude.
It's so exhausting, all this beer and people wanting to hang out. It's bullshit, man.
But yes, thanks for opening the doors to us and letting us hang here on the church pews and record a little episode, talk beer, talk Yazoo. And yeah, it's been a very enjoyable episode.
Yeah, man. I want you to keep up the good work, too, man. I know that people don't want to acknowledge the fourth wall here at times, but
yeah.
Keeping a podcast and good content and people and being creative for 2 years is a lot harder than starting a restaurant and keeping it open for 1 year. So I know what that takes and what it takes to put into it, and the shit ain't easy. So
it makes it easier when it involves drinking.
I know it does, but you still got
to to the point where I do it 2 times a week. Yeah, now. I got the new side podcast.
Yeah, but you still got to edit shit and put it up and all that.
I do have some help thanks to the podcasting god Blake Clayton. I have to do all the groundwork and do the edit notes and where to cut and splice, and he posts it up and. Then you guys listen to it. There's a little bit more behind the scenes than just, we drink beer and then I upload it. It'd be so much easier if it was that. But,
yeah.
You know. But this is a time for you now to let people know where can they find Yazoo online, social media.
Okay.
What events do you guys have
that
you're going to be a part of?
Yeah, we're loading up. We're going to be going out doing a couple funk events at it for the Great American Beer Festival coming up in October. We have, I'm not sure when this podcast will be coming out, but September the 9th, we're doing a triathlon here in Nashville.
Okay.
It is
it won't be out by then.
All right, cool. It's a good try.
You guys had a blast.
No, I just want to tell everybody our barely triathlon. We're doing a 240-inch swim. It's like 20 feet. Oblong shaped swimming pool, man. No, we have that, but you may want to find us. You can find us at Yazoo Brew on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter. I forgot to log in to MySpace. I handle all of
that. Is that still a thing?
I think some. I think Justin Timberlake bought it or something, at least what the kids say. I handle all of our social media and all interactions that people have with the company. We're pretty transparent here. So if anyone wants to follow along with our funky and sour stuff, follow along at Embrace the Funk. That's Brandon's Twitter handle or Instagram. And anything else, you can just send it through any of our socials. I get every single one of those. But if you find yourself in town or, you know, from around, love to have a beer with y'all. And if anybody has any questions about where we're at or what's going on, we always try to make ourselves as reachable as possible. So that's how we connected here. So, appreciate it, man.
We were just talking through Twitter and shit. And it was like, hey, I'm going to be in town. Would you want to do a podcast? And be like, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And it was just... ironed out a time and a date, and here we are. And
yeah,
good times, man.
And if anybody's out always looking for some good, cool one-off beers, we've now hitting our stride, or Brandon is, with the Embrace the Funk. And we usually have about 5 or 6 available here at the tap room. Mm-hmm. Some of them we'd never even tell anybody about. We'll put 25 bottles on the shelf, so everybody has just a good chance to get something badass by coming by, or what we have on draft. Alan and our tap room crew do a good job. So our hours are a little bit funky, so check out yazoobrew.com. To get all the information about our beers and stuff like that, and or more importantly, just follow us on our socials if you get the opportunity.
And if you're too lazy to look it up, all you gotta do is click the info of the episode. They're all hyperlinked, so you just push the button and it'll take you right there. That's some of that behind the scenes magic.
That's good stuff, man.
So you gotta make it easy, because again,
technology.
We've said Yazoo quite a few times. They should be nice and. Nice and loose.
I know, by this point.
I mean, they're dancing naked in their we hope it's their home. Yeah. God, I know people listen to podcasts while they run and they go to the gym, or they're mowing their lawn. So let's hope there's no public indecency on my part. I can't claim responsibility for that. I won't do it. I won't stand for it. Just put your damn clothes back on, you drunken maniacs. All right, well, for Freckles, me, this is improper grammar. I don't care. Neil, thank you again.
My pleasure.
All right, this is The Voice signing off from Yazoo in Nashville, saying, may your music be loud and your beers be cold. We'll see you in a week.
This has been a Fakakta Comedy Funhouse production, produced by Dustin Wyckoff, executive produced by Blake Clayton. For more information and content, go to fcfnetwork.com.